You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What is up, Bison fans, and welcome back to another edition of Bison Report Radio, brought to you by Below Zero Wrestling. I am your host, Ross Uglum. We have a jam-packed show for you today. Although I will say, listening to that intro, got Jeff Culhane at Florida State. You got Tyler Roll at Tennessee State. We might have to redo some of what we got going on at Bison Report Radio as far as the intro. I don't think we're going to lose the song, because Sweet Lovin' is just, it's too good, but might have to make an adjustment there on, who we're using, and the wonderful people that, you know, say nice things about us here at Bison Report. As I mentioned, my name is Ross Uglum. You are going to hear nobody in studio, which is fine. The Bison Report studio is here in beautiful Horace, North Dakota. I'm going to try and really quickly turn this bad boy around, but we've got Andy Rickoff, which was really fun, just because, hey, North Dakota State women's basketball is 8-2 in the league, okay, and fought South Dakota State strong and almost came away with the win at home and you know, really looked to have a shot at certainly at least finally making it to the Summit League tournament game. I would say with the up-and-down nature and the fact that the number one team in the conference right now is technically South Dakota State, and NDSU men beat them in their gym, I'm not going to say it's likely, but I would say it's certainly on the table that Summit League Championship might, for the first time ever, include North Dakota State in both games. Not sure they'd be favored in either one, but they might end up in both games. It's just an exciting time. So we've got Andy Rickoff on to talk about that, and then Nate Zastro and I discuss the home sweep in men's basketball. Never easy with, I believe, overtime went on Thursday, and then really kind of letting Omaha back into the game unnecessarily on Saturday. Couple bits of news. Not anything crazy. It's been certainly plenty of time between, and we covered it just fine. Blake Anninger-Bretson, our intern, did a fantastic job. I was at the press conference that introduced cornerbacks coach Will Johnson, safeties coach Devin Kleiman, offensive coordinator and running backs coach Jake Landry, and actually Coach Polsek had quite a bit to say. If you we're not going to cover that just because I think this is releasing a week after that, and so I would probably define that as old news. But I would encourage anybody, and not just because I was asking questions in it, but like I would encourage anybody to go watch that press conference and listen to some of the things that Tim said and some of the things that the coaches said. Other than that, Bobby Babich, former NDSU corner and obviously the son of former NDSU football head coach Bob Babich, now the defensive coordinator at Buffalo, I know was one of, you know, someone of high interest for the Packers job, and I know he had other opportunities as well. Obviously, covering Green Bay for CBS and 24/7 Sports, publishing the Packer Report. I keep tabs on, you know, what Green Bay's got going on, and I know Bobby interviewed for the job and got that promotion in Buffalo. I'm not 100% sure if he or head coach Sean McDermott will call the defensive plays, but impressive nonetheless. Spencer Wagey does not win the Super Bowl, or his 49ers do not win the Super Bowl. And Joe Haig retiring after 7 years in the NFL. I believe that was today, on Tuesday, February 13th, when you're hopefully getting this bad boy. Joe Haig announcing his retirement from the National Football League. Okay, I'm going to personally, if it's all right with you guys, go in the Wayback Machine and talk a little bit of Bison football recruiting. You know, we I used to be that guy, right? I still believe that I know enough about stuff and talk to the right people, but I'm gonna try and put my recruiting analyst hat on, which is something, you know, that I haven't done a ton of lately. Oh, by the way, Carlton Littlejohn on the defensive staff. I would even maybe argue that that's old news, but hey, it's news, right? And so Carlton has some press availability, I think, this week. I don't think I'll attend just because I have some other stuff going on. And there's an awesome, by the way, if you guys get a chance, you'd have to be a VIP, but we encourage that anyway. First month's always $1 at Bison Report if you just want to check out what we're about. But LJ and I actually broke down film in the home studio before I had these beautiful digs in Horace. And that was a lot of fun. And Carlton's a fun guy to talk to. And I really encourage anybody that wants to kind of watch or listen to Carlton talk ball and understand what kind of coach he is and not just necessarily what kind of player he was. That BRTV, and we shared it from the Twitter account, so you guys can, it's up like recently. You don't have to, although a quick Google for like Carlton Littlejohn Bison Reporter, Carlton Littlejohn Ross Uglum brings it right up because that's how I found it. Super, super fun and very, very interesting to me going and watching that back and just kind of listening to some of the stuff that that Carlton had to say and kind of he and I's conversation just about football and what an impressive football mind he was. And I think he's going to be a great coach. I love the defensive energy on the staff. I think, you know, there's enough from the standpoint, in my opinion, you know, of diversity, of scheme and diversity of experience. You have Devin Kleiman, who of course, comes from the Chris Kleiman tree, but he just spent 3 years in the Big 12. Will Johnson is a high major guy, having spent time at Oklahoma and USC. But then you have, you know, your Bison roots with Carlton Littlejohn and Grant Olson and Nick Gazer. You know, those guys have been in the trenches and understand what Code Green defense is all about. But, you know, getting a little something from the Joe Klanderman defensive tree and Devin Kleiman and getting that Big 12 and just kind of that outside experience with Will Johnson. And again, like I said, you know, what Carlton brings, what Goose brings, but they have enough there where it's still going to be Bison defense and it's still going to be something that we understand, but there are some outside voices. And I think that's important when you're trying to get out of a rut defensively, which honestly, I kind of think NDSU is. I mean, I think they'd like to play better defense. All right. Diving into the late signing day period. I'm not going to say disappointing. I'm going to say a little bit surprising in that just two transfers in. And frankly, I'm not even sure because so Jacob Kilzer, who we'll talk about second, even though I'm talking about him right now, both his parents went to NDSU. He attended Air Force Prep during the 2023 football season. So they're allegedly, and I'm 100% sure which way it's going, he didn't attend Air Force. So allegedly, he might have 5 years left instead of four, which would be good because he's not going to play this year in front of Cole Payton or Cam Miller. I'm not even going to say he's going to jump, you know, Trey Drake or Nathan Hayes or, you know, guys they have in the building already. It would be awesome if he had 5 years left. I should have asked that question. It would have been out of place at the coach's press conference. I maybe try and accomplish that a different way. But that one's interesting. And so I don't even know if it counts as a transfer because he was at Air Force Prep. But the one transfer, and so why I say it's interesting, surprising, disappointing, maybe to some is, you know, Paul II, look, he came in late, right? I mean, and I also want other people to understand, yes, these transfers do get announced on signing day as part of, like, the additions. To my knowledge, though, any kid in the portal who's already in the portal could commit to NDSU and they just wouldn't be able to enroll. It's too late to enroll, is my understanding. So they would enroll in summer school and be a part of fall camp. But you could get a transfer portal commitment tomorrow, is my understanding of how all that works. Anyway, that to say, I'm not necessarily disappointed in the guy they got. Trent Fraley, 6'2", 300. He was at Marshall, played in some games. I watched the film that existed of him. Definitely an interior guy. Played offensive tackle in high school at 6'2". That's impressive, especially since it was like high area or high level ball. And again, I'm very impressed with him, but he's a shorter guy. Okay, he's not gonna have any problem with leverage, but he's not Jalen Sundell. He's certainly not Cody Mock. Certainly not Cordell from a height standpoint. Like, he's a shorter guy, and that's fine. They've had Tyler Gimmestead. They've had successful 6'2", 6'3" linemen. Don't get, you know, Jake Kubis is 6'3". Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong on that. It's fine, but he's gonna have to play center or guard. I don't think he's gonna have tackle flexibility, and that's fine, because I think Gray Zabel, and potentially, honestly, too. I know Mason Miller was fine at guard, but they might need him to play tackle. You know, Jake Rock's involved there. I think Hunter Pontius is going to be involved there. But Mason Miller is still kind of that tall athlete, linear, kind of like long. He still might be best served for the 2024 team at tackle. And if that's the case, well, you lost Westberg, you lost Kubis, and then you lose Gray or Mason, whomever from that other guard spot. Like, there might be interior spots available. You know, we think there are interior spots available. Now, Gray could play an interior spot. They really like Jack Lewinsky. They mentioned Devin Lockerbie, Griffin Empey. They mentioned interior guys, but I think Fraley, along with last year's transfer in from a Power 5, although Marshall, obviously not a Power 5, Isaac Zadichka, getting a year to sort of absorb NDSU's playbook, I think those guys have a chance to play. And have a real opportunity to work on the interior of the offensive line, just because, you know, NDSU's key returners, after losing Sundell, after losing Westberg, after losing Kubis, are Mason Miller and Gray. And I wonder if Gray and Mason Miller aren't best suited at left and right tackle. I don't know what they're going to do for sure, but they're both long. They both have tackle capability. And more often than not, you want your best two linemen at tackle. So Fraley, Trent Fraley, by the way, his dad, Hank Fraley, played 11 seasons. I remember Hank Fraley. Played 11 seasons in the NFL for the Eagles. I remember him as an Eagle, played from 2000 to 2010, was a big part of the Andy Reid Eagles, and I think is the O-line coach for the Lions right now. And so it comes from NFL bloodlines, highly intelligent, you would assume, with the football side of things. And, again, I think, definitely a position of need or a position of interest for an older body. They're probably fine or comfortable or happy with some of these redshirt freshmen, these redshirt sophomores that we haven't seen actually play. But there's nothing wrong with adding an older old lineman into the room. I don't think there's any problem. And it's not like Fraley's ancient. He's high school class of 22, but he's played G5 football. He's been on the field playing, you know, FBS ball. So I think a decent addition there in Trent Fraley. I liked the way he used his leverage. I thought he moved pretty well. I think he needs to get a little stronger. But I liked what I saw for the most part with Trent Fraley. Kilzer's the interesting one. And that's always going to kind of be the case with the quarterback. NDSU losing QB Ryan Bowe late in the process to Northwestern and to David Braun. That happens. It's a much shorter drive for his parents to watch him play too. To go to Northwestern. We've kind of talked about the Ryan Bowe situation in the past and wished absolutely no ill will on Coach Braun or the kid. I mean, that I just think makes plenty of sense. But Kilzer, whether he has 4 or 5 years left, is a three-star kid from Maple Grove, really impressive athlete. I think he's going to be kind of a thinner Cole Payton, if that makes sense to people. 6'3", and I spoke to people because the Gophers offered a PWO, kind of a Trey Lance-type situation. Now, I don't want to put that on Jacob, because Trey might be the best football player to ever play at NDSU at the college level. And that might seem blasphemous to people. I mean, we saw him for really 1 year, and he won the Walter Payton, he won the Jerry Rice. I mean, God knows what would have happened if Trey Lance would have played 3 full years at North Dakota State, or 4. Anyway, that's a dream for another day. But the Gophers, or at least people around the Gopher program that I know, thought he could play safety. And if a Big Ten school thinks you're a good enough athlete to play safety, well, that's really interesting. You look at, his final year there, passing for 1,300 yards and rushing for 1,300 yards. When your rushing TDs are 20 and your passing TDs are 13, it's going to be a project for Randy Hedberg. And I don't mean that in a mean way, because Wyoming was after him. And of course, they have the Josh Allen lineage, and North Dakota State was after him, and they have the Carson Wentz lineage. And if I was honestly to pick, of all the great quarterbacks that have gone through NDSU, and if you're looking for like a player comp, I would say reminds me the most of Carson, who is kind of that gangly athlete. He's not as tall as Carson. Kind of that gangly athlete that you know is good enough to play somewhere else. Because, you know, as people said, Carson could have played tight end. Carson could have played tight end in the NFL, a lot of people felt, if he added some weight, some strength. But, you know, before he got hurt, he was an MVP candidate at quarterback, and that's more valuable. So Kilzer, to me, fills a need when you lose a guy like Ryan Bowe. And honestly, and look, I have not asked, and maybe that's me not doing my job, but I have not asked a ton of questions about the other quarterbacks after Cam and Cole. Something we're going to, you know, I think Cole, I mean, my God, if you're going to come back, if you're Cole Payton, you're going to come back this year, to me it would be insane to then transfer out before he's going to be the starter. So I think you feel like you know who the starter is going to be at quarterback for the next 2 years. You're going to have Cam Miller in kind of a 70-30 timeshare again with Cole Payton, and then you might just give Cole Payton the keys to the offense then in 2025. And that's cool. After that, though, there's a massive question mark, right? And I don't mean that as in I think they've developed poorly. I don't mean that as in I think they've recruited poorly. I don't know the answers, man. You know, they missed out on Lincoln Kienholz, and he ended up at Ohio State. So that's very, very understandable. And so, you know, Trey Drake is just from a part of the country that they don't normally get quarterbacks. Nathan Hayes, we didn't see much, right? So you just never know what you might have in Nathan Hayes or Trey Drake. They got plenty of years of eligibility left, and to throw a guy like Kilzer in with them as kind of, hey, young man, here's the two guys you're competing against. Go compete your butt off. Go learn from Randy Hedberg. I think it puts him in a better spot than not having a QB at all. And just impressive a little bit on the side, too, just honestly how they kept it quiet. Doesn't bother me any, but, you know, we didn't know. And that's not always the case, right? That's not always how things work. But we had no idea that that this was happening. We had zero idea that Kilzer was going to be added until the school sent out the release. And I don't think anybody else in town did either. Like, I didn't see the forum or Valley News Live or anybody on the Kilzer thing. All of a sudden, boom, there he was on the press release. And maybe the most important, you know, if he works out at quarterback, he's automatically the most important kid in the class. So, interesting kind of work in the shadows there by North Dakota State to get Jacob Kilzer, who was an Air Force commit, but really, you know, if you read it, Air Force prep, he never actually played for Air Force. And then two, you know, big, burly, 6'3", 6'4", offensive, defensive line walk-ons. I'm not going to pretend to know a ton about them, but, you know, the way NDSU works is a decent chance either Gage Schmidt or Jack Hansen works out and sees time at NDSU. It's just kind of the way the program works, and excited to add more big bodies. You can never have too many big bodies in football. All right, let's send it right now to my conversation with Andy Rickoff as the North Dakota State women's team is just off to a roll. Let's talk to Andy right now. All right, here with Bison 1660's Andy Rickoff. Andy also handles the play-by-play for the NDSU women's basketball team. Andy, welcome, and also thanks for the time, man.
Hey, Ross, appreciate you having me. Appreciate you talking with NDSU women's basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. They've been on quite a tear, and that's why we felt like we had to check in. I'm just spitballing off the top of my head. You might know this better than I. You know, we just talked very briefly off the air about how, like, you know, my thing is men's basketball and football. But when the women's team is this hot, we've got to check in. So I don't necessarily have the historical background, right? But I would guess that this is the first time they've been 8-2 in league play in the Division I era. What would be my guess?
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to last year, they had some losses towards the end of the season. I don't know if they exactly got to 8-2. I don't remember the exact order of who came when. I know they lost at Oral Roberts kind of early in conference play, and lost at Frost at SDSU as well. I don't know if they got to 8-2 last year, but they had a great year last year in conference and finished with the 2 seed a season ago. Obviously 18 wins last year, the most in Division I history. They had a great start at home last year as well. Most wins to start a season, 6-0 last year in Division I history. And then this year getting 14-9 and 8-2 again, and a great home record of 8-1, and second place in the Summit League. This has been a great back-to-back two seasons here for Jory Collins and company.
If you don't, refresh my memory, how deep did they make it in the tournament last year? Because I feel like that would kind of be the next step. How, I know that you said two seed. How deep did they make it in the actual tournament?
The Summit League tournament, you're asking?
Yeah, the tournament. Yeah, the Summit League tournament.
Lost in the opening round last year against Kansas City. A bit of an upset. KC came in, and sure, it was just one of those days where the Bison didn't hit some shots. They fell behind early, came back, and made it a close one, but weren't able to get over the hump there against KC. But then they did go to the WNIT last year, getting the two seed.
That's right.
And being second in the regular season, with SDSU winning the auto bid. The next highest finishing team in the regular season gets a bid to the WNIT. So the Bison women did do that and went on and played Oregon last year.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah. So I guess what I'm asking on that, or what I'm trying to get to is, like, that's the next step, right? Yeah. We've seen them, not last year, but we have seen them win a round of eight game. They made it to the semis in the Summit, but with the just dominant stretch that USD and SDSU have, I mean, the women's title, like, game there is like, it's just red versus blue. I mean, that's
usually
what it
is. Yeah.
That's what it's, you know, that's what it's been. So I feel like that's definitely the next step and what this team is kind of striving for. You know, the number one seed, South Dakota State, still seems kind of be off in the distance yet. Although their loss to South Dakota State in the Shack was no embarrassing endeavor. I mean, that was a close enough game, but that has to be the next step, right? Is, all right, let's see what Tuesday is all about. Let's see what the Summit League Championship game is all about.
Yeah, that's the step they're looking at, and they're not looking at that yet. I mean, it's one game at a time, right? If you ask them, it's every single game. But that was their goal when the season started, and I don't think it was, you know, every team sets out to win a conference championship and we can do it type of thing. Like, it was legitimate. Yep. Like, we've got the players to do this. We've got Heaven Hamlin, who's now the leading scorer all-time Division I history. We've got L. Evans, reigning freshman of the year, who's having a player of the year-like season now. And they've got some great players to go along with them. Abby Schulte's an absolute great floor general. So they've got great players, and they could legitimately say, we can challenge for it. You know, second seed a year ago, you want to challenge and be the number one this year. And SDSU came in with some injuries that they had, and they were a little bit short on players too. So I think there's a lot of things that led to the belief that NDSU could be the one seed, and there's still a chance. You need the Jacks got to slip up now. They're two games ahead of NDSU. The Bison right now 8-2 in conference, and SDSU, to their credit, they've gone through a lot of adversity this year. They're still undefeated, haven't lost a game. But up here in Fargo, you're right, it was a really close game, and there's no such thing as moral victories. Jordan Collins will be the first one to tell you that. But to have that game tied with a minute and a half left, unfortunately didn't make the plays down the stretch to get the victory, but that was as close as they have been in a long time against that team. And I'm looking forward to the last game of the regular season, very beginning of March down in Brookings. Hopefully that game it means something, that there's a one seed on the line or something. You need SDSU to lose a game. Doesn't look like they're probably going to, but you never know with the way this season can go and turn. And they're short-handed right now, short-staffed in terms of players. Only 7 scholarship players for SDSU right now with some injuries. So if they lose one, then that game in Brookings has a lot of importance for, you know, seeding and regular season stuff.
Could be pulling gals out of the student body.
They actually have. Yeah, I definitely have taken a student who is a high school basketball player in the state of South Dakota or Minnesota, one of the two, but she's a student at SDSU and now is technically on the team.
Yeah, I can't remember what other Division I men's program it was, but somebody had something similar where they were like, hey, if you played high school ball, we're doing an open tryout and one of you is going to be on the team, not scholarship, but one of you is going to be on the team. I want to talk about kind of the development track of this team and try to get some perspective. Right, because I'm looking at the schedule here, and like I said, we're obviously, I'm aware of what's going on with the women's program, or we wouldn't be having this conversation. But I'm not deep. I'm certainly not to your depth of kind of having seen them. I look back at just a simple schedule read. Right, crushed by Creighton. Really, kind of not very competitive with the Gophers, and we're talking about Creighton and the Gophers. But even, you know, losing by 15 to Toledo. Really getting cracked in the Big Sky Challenge by Montana State. How much has this group kind of grown, or is it just that the Summit, and it sounds mean, but is it just that they're sort of the cream of the crop in the Summit, or has there been real growth? Cause I look at some of these early results and it's kind of like, okay. But now you look at, you know, playing close with the Rabbits, scoring 101 at the Betty. right? And really a dominant road trip. And that's hard to do. Okay, you go out to Kansas City and you go to Omaha, you might have a better club than them, and that's fine. But you go out and beat somebody in their house by 11, and then 2 days later beat somebody else in their house by 14, that's impressive to me, no matter the level of competition. So have you seen real growth? Have you seen real improvement?
Oh, absolutely. And I'll touch on what you mentioned first. So
sure.
This schedule, when it came out, it was a daunting schedule, but it was for a reason. Jory Collins wanted to challenge his team. I wanted to put them in uncomfortable environments where you're playing on the road. Think about some of the spots they've played. You know, the Gophers usually get a decent crowd. And that was a team they beat a year ago, but now they got Dawn Plitzaway as the head coach, and she has very quickly turned around that Gophers program.
Shocker.
They're playing at Iowa State, and that place is packed every single game for them, and it was a tough environment. They played at Drake. Drake is probably the number one team in the Missouri Valley Conference, a very good basketball conference, and played there on their kids' day, where they brought every single second to sixth grader basically in the Des Moines area to the game. I'm not kidding you. There was over 6,500 kids there, and they were playing Baby Shark. I never heard a place that loud. Oh, they played some tough environments against some very good teams. Creighton's a top 25 team. Toledo's number three in the mid-major poll. And they had lead after the third quarter, I believe, against Toledo. For sure at the half against Toledo there. So there was some really good moments for the Bison in those games, but they were a young team, and they had to grow, and they had to learn some things there. Look at all the freshmen, four true freshmen playing right now. A redshirt freshman playing. You got two sophomores. One of them's leading you right now in L11. So this is a young team had to learn. They did. That Montana State game, there's some crappy travel situations there too. Supposed to fly out the day before. The charter gets messed up. You end up flying out day of game. And then about 5 hours later, playing a game wasn't ideal there. That's just an excuse. They still needed to play better, but that's the excuse I'm going to give you. But then you get the Summit League play, and they've been great. And I think they are closer with SDSU. The Jacks are still the cream of the crop, no doubt. You can't take that away from them yet. But I think that gap is closing. The Bison are hoping it's closing, and they showed that in the first meeting. You got to do that again at the end of the season. But I've definitely seen this team grow and get better. And it's only going to be on the up and up, Ross, because, like I said, you got five freshmen playing right now, four of them true freshmen. Two sophomores, like this team, I know Heaven Hamlin's going to graduate, and she's a tremendous player, leading scorer all-time D1. But this is a young team that is growing and going to keep on getting better.
We'll get into the Summit League in one sec, because I want to address this real quick. The Green and the Gold Collective and kind of the NIL landscape, and you look at a player, and I look at a player like L. Evans, and if there was an L. Evans equivalent on the men's side right now, the only thing anybody would be talking about is, gee, I wonder what kind of offers L. Evans is going to get in the portal.
Right.
And I, you know, there happen to be two people know about Grant. And I sometimes lay awake at night and think about what the men's team would be doing to the Summit League right now, if Grant were still here, but that's fine. I hope people understand that there's actually two former Bison at Alabama right now. Or has she gone?
She's gone from Alabama. You're talking about Ryan Cobbins, I'm guessing.
I am.
Kansas now.
Okay. Well, anyway, either way, I'm sorry. I didn't know where she went after Alabama. But the point that I'm making is, you're mentioning these true freshmen that are, you know, playing. You have a true sophomore as potentially the league player of the year. Probably go to someone from South Dakota State, just the way the Summit League voting goes. But I mean, how much does the collective help? How concerned do you feel like Jory is at keeping this group together? And kind of what's that like on the women's side? Do you feel like the Ryan Cobbins situation is unique, or, you know, something happens less often, or is it like a real concern?
I wouldn't say it's a real concern. Now, anything can happen. You know, I mean, the changing landscape of college athletics in general is changing every single day, and it's getting crazier and crazier. And there have been players on the collegiate women's game that have transferred and gone to, you know, bigger school or got the big NIL deals. It does happen. So obviously that is definitely a factor. And Elle Evans has. I mean, she's been helped out, I believe, by the Green and Gold Collective, and they've done some great stuff with her. She's had some good commercials and some good publicity there, and she's earned it. She deserves it 100%. And some other players on the team have as well. So I think that's a good aspect, and that's helping with the program in general. It's definitely going to be a tool used in recruiting. But this team is just – you talk to all the players, and it's going to sound cliched, but they love Jory. They love the program. They love their teammates. I know there's some players that left midseason People point to that quite a bit. Some players that left. I'll tell you, there's some other circumstances to that, some family circumstances that some players had to leave as well. There's some other things that got involved there. I don't think that is technically a worry or specifically a worry for the coaching staff with any of the players that are currently on this roster. It's a good group. They really like each other. They know what they're building. They love where they're at. And I don't think that's an issue. Now, I've heard it from other fans too. They've said the same thing you just said, that L. Evans is so good, where she's going to be playing in the next couple of years, right? But I think having the Green and Gold Collective helping out a little bit already. And, I mean, she didn't come here from West Fargo. She came here from Evansville, Illinois. It wasn't, like, next door. So she came here for a reason, and she likes it, and I think she's going to be sticking around for a long time. So you better get out to the shack and watch her.
Hey, man, that's awesome to hear. No, it had to be discussed or addressed, right? You have a good
she's
team.
She's great, 100%, yeah.
You know, you have a good team full of young mid-major, you know, well, when are they going to go high major? That's just like part of the conversation. And it sucks. I don't love it, but it is part of the conversation now. Okay. Let's wrap up shop here. Cause you got to get going. That's fine. We appreciate your time. Sell me two things. First, paint me the path where NDSU can win the Summit League tournament. And go to their first dance this year. And we understand that that might be a little pie in the sky. But with this young group then, paint me what the next 2 to 3 years might look like. And sure. And why that could actually be on the table in a situation where they might even be favored to do so relatively soon as opposed to trying to play Cinderella in Sioux Falls.
100%. I think those are great questions, and I think they're both attainable. Even the one this year, and people are going to say pie in the sky. I get it. Because until you beat SDSU, until you beat them, they're going to be the kings of the castle.
Right.
And I know a little while ago you had said that the championship game is just, you know, it's blue and red. It's SDSU and USD. Well, half of that's been true. USD didn't – they lost in the first round too last year. They lost to Oral Roberts. And USD hasn't quite been the same this year. They're playing much better now. But NDSU went to Vermilion and got a win – or went to USD and got a win this year.
Yeah.
Oral Roberts went down there and got a win. I believe St. Thomas went there and got a win. Or SDSU for sure went there and got a win. So they've been vulnerable even at home. And I think I'd favor the Bison in that matchup. So I think NDSU will probably finish as the 2 seed, most likely, going into the tournament. Got a huge game with Oral Roberts coming up here this week at home. I would encourage everyone to get out there for that one. The last time they played Oral Roberts at home, they scored 100 points. So it should be a fun and entertaining game. And then if you're the 2 seed, you know this, you're getting that extra day's rest if you can win that first game. And the Bison should be heavily favored in that first game. I know they lost it a year ago, but they should be heavy favorites. So if you get that extra day of rest, then you're going to have to beat either Oral Roberts or USD, most likely. They've beaten those teams already this year. Or they've beaten USD and they got a game with Oral Roberts coming up here where they could get a win. And then you're talking about how do you beat SDSU? That's the path, right? That's what you got to do. Well, SDSU, as I said, has 7 scholarship players. And I know they beat Oral Roberts this week by almost 30 with 7 scholarship players, and they did it in Tulsa. But all it takes is Brooklyn Meyer gets 2 fouls in the first quarter. Paige Meyer gets 2 fouls in the first quarter. Yeah, I mean, you're right now on really thin ice where one more injury, which I hope doesn't happen, but like there's 7 scholarship players just isn't much. And if they get one of those key players, one of the Myers gets in foul trouble, or if just their role players don't have a great day. I mean, at Tulsa against ORU, Maddie Mathewitz had, I think it was 22 or 21 points. She was great. In their game against USD when they only had 7 scholarship players, Ellie Kolbeck hit 5 threes, and give credit to those players. They stepped up big, but those are the role players. And if they don't have if they have an off day a little bit, then, you know, that could be the difference. And NDSU only lost by 6 earlier this season. And that was with 8 scholarship players. And the player that unfortunately went down was Vlasten, who's a really good player and their 3-point specialist. She had hit 53 shots in conference play. 43 of them were threes. Like, she's a 3-point shooter, and she spreads the floor for him. So that's a sizable loss. And if they get any foul trouble, the Bison could have a chance to beat them. I really don't think it's that unrealistic this season to think that could happen. Not that it will happen, but the Bison have as good of a chance as they've had in a decade plus of doing that. And then for the future, the roadmap's pretty clear. Keep getting the players they're getting, because they're Division I, Summit League, mid-major quality players. You've got L. Evans, freshman of the year, potentially player of the year this year. You've got 4 true freshmen who are all playing their true freshman year. Abby Kriswinski has started 20 games in a row as a true freshman, and she's playing well too. It's not just like she's there for a couple of minutes and getting maybe a point or two. She's averaging over 7 points, just scored a season high in points on the road at Omaha. The last game had, I think it was 15 or 16 points, and that was a season high for her. So she's playing a lot. Avery Kunin is averaging 5.5 rebounds per game right now in conference play. These are legitimate players. I know they're excited about the next recruiting class. The last two have been phenomenal. You couldn't have asked for much better in the last two recruiting classes. They've got some extra scholarships now because of some things that happened in the middle of this season to go out. Maybe you get a transfer to come in that can help you out, somewhat replace the loss of Heaven Hamley. You're not going to replace her with one player particularly, but hopefully can be someone that can help you out there. And you've got Elle Evans for a couple more years, and she's only going to get better. So I think the future is extremely bright going forward.
All right, Andy, we thank you so much for your time. Appreciate you kind of keeping the Bison Report Radio listeners in tune with what's going on for right now, which is a very, very exciting and successful women's program. We'll talk to you soon, I'm sure.
Thank you, Ross. Appreciate it.
Oh, man, that was exciting. I want to get to a couple women's games. The problem is they have to be at a different time than the men's game because even if not traveling with the team, I got to watch the game, and I'm not going to sit down on press row and watch the men on my computer while the women play. I feel like that's kind of disrespectful. I hope there is another time where they play at different times, probably on a Saturday. But I really do want to get to see them play live, especially Elle Evans. At her size, I mean, she's playing guard. Like, there's 6'3 guards in the Summit League, you know? I mean, NDSU's point guard's smaller than Elle. And I think she's a special talent. I just want to see her play. As I mentioned at the top of the show, this is brought to you, this episode of Bison Report Radio is brought to you by Below Zero Wrestling. And, guys, BZW has their event of the year this Saturday at Winter Slam. And I've been to a bunch of events. You know, I was a wrestling guy as a kid. I loved to watch it with my cousin. We'd go down to the pizza and movie rental place in Mayville, North Dakota, rent old WrestleManias. And it's fun if you like it. And honestly, it's just an amazing way to entertain the family. And speaking of that, folks, I mean, we've got $5 tickets. Oh, to the Butler Arena at the Valley Fairgrounds. It's already, with the tickets that they've sold, I'm being told it's the biggest event they've ever had. Got to the point where they were just consistently selling out the Sanctuary downtown Fargo, so they went to a bigger venue. And I've been told the goal is 1,000 people. They're approaching that goal. They have eclipsed the 500 ticket mark. And of course, there are walk-ups, people that just kind of roll up. But don't be those people. Buy your tickets in advance and buy your tickets at BelowZeroWrestling.com or just check out their social media pages and get 10% off any ticket, even, guys, even the $5 ticket. I know that's just 50 cents, but if you got a family of five going, it's worth it. 10% off any ticket to Winter Slam with promo code BISON. That's BISON. Go see Nick and the guys at BZW. It's going to be a great show. Doors at 4:30, starts at 6. Guys you've seen on TV, Maven, who has an unbelievably huge YouTube channel, John Morrison or Johnny Nitro, Johnny, whoever you remember, he changes his name depending on which promotion he's working for. But guys you've seen on BZW, local talent, two brothers from Minot are going to fight in a cage match. Like, this is just going to be bonkers and just so much fun this Saturday. Doors at 4:30. Show starts at 6. Butler Arena, Red River Valley Fair. Promo code BISON, B-I-S-O-N, for 10% off. All right, folks, let's wrap things up with my men's basketball conversation with my good pal, Nate Zastro. All right, now bringing on Bison Report men's basketball analyst, Nate Zastro. Nate, how you doing, buddy?
We're doing well. Home sweep, a very important home sweep, and crazy to see how this conference season has gone. NDSU goes from second last, and they get two straight wins, and they all of a sudden just vault up to fourth place. But I'm guessing we'll talk a little bit about that. Not very convincing wins, but finding a way to win, which they haven't been able to do a lot this season. So it's good to see them get a couple close wins.
Yeah, and what a just a crazy league, you know. And we can get into some of that, but South Dakota State now in first place, and NDSU beat them in their gym, right? I mean, it's just crazy. And we talked the last time we spoke about, you know, how NDSU basically had a chance or, you know, should have won every game. And of course they weren't going to, but just kind of how close the league is, how close these Bison games have been. Their inability to close out games, which kind of reared its ugly head again yet this weekend, but we can get into all of that kind of as we go. Just breaking news. This won't be breaking for folks because you're not going to probably get this until Tuesday morning, but Andrew Morgan, Summit League Player of the Week. How about that?
Yeah, and we've been waiting for that for Morgan, and we've seen spurts of it with a game here and there, and then all of a sudden he'll be coming off the bench because he doesn't show consistency or doesn't have good practices. And just seeing it for even two straight games this weekend, hopefully that gives him the confidence to be able to continue to extend his minutes to the 25-30 range, because, I mean, we've seen what he can do when he's able to get the ball in the post, back someone down and make a post move when he wants to have his head on straight and when he wants to crash the glass and when he wants to be the player that he wants to be. He's one of the top bigs in the conference, and I'm not saying that because I'm an NDSU fan. He legit is one of the top bigs in the conference if he wants to play like he did last weekend. So hopefully that can continue for him, and congrats to him for Summit League Player of the Week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I certainly view things through an NDSU lens, but I think Feddersen and Morgan, and look, like, college basketball is a guard-driven sport, especially as you get late in the season, and I think that's been kind of part of NDSU's issue. And we'll get into some of that when we get a chance, but I think they have two of the best five or six bigs in the conference. I mean, true bigs, which Feddersen and Morgan are. I'm not sure, you know, how the averages or the, you know, the actual box score stats have that play out, but man, if either one of them were the like sole option for their team and playing 32-33 minutes a game, I think what we've seen from Feddersen lately, and obviously what we've now seen from Morgan, I think they both would be like in the look for honorable all mention, especially if you're going to make sure and get, you know, the bigs in there and not just allow the voting to be all guards. But okay, let's travel back in time to that win over Kansas City. Another game where it just seemed like that one probably didn't need to go to overtime, right? Another kind of frustrating, I guess, you know, game to watch. You've got a big lead by Kansas City that gets erased by North Dakota State, and the comeback, you know, was certainly fun and exciting. But when you're in a situation where all you have to do is just not allow a three with 13 seconds left on the clock, when, you know, we've talked about fouling when up ahead, right? When at the end of the South Dakota State game, when they didn't foul Zeke Mayo, and yet again up three with 13 seconds left, and Jamar Brown cashes in a three.
Yeah, and I think the South Dakota State game, you know, when Zeke Mayo's rocking you back and forth, and there's under 5 seconds left, or even 6-7 seconds left, that's a great time to foul. 13 might be a little much because they could still get it up the floor, and you still got to hit both free throws, and a lot of stuff can still go wrong for you. But just seeing it happen again just kind of stunk. I mean, they come all the way back, and you got a 3-point lead with a possession left. You need one stop, and didn't find a way to get it done. And good thing they won in overtime, but KC is the typical Kansas City team. I mean, they're going to play hard. They're going to be physical. And it was good to see them respond after a half of them kind of kicking our butts a little bit and find a way to get it done in overtime.
Yeah. NDSU just started so slow offensively, you know, still ended up actually shooting sub 30% from three. Really did a great job from the free throw line though. And that, to me, is the reason why they won the game. I think was their performance at the free throw line, their ability to get to the line, and really, I think their depth helped out in a big way when you've got when you have Jakari playing the way that he did. They're really getting good minutes from Lance Waddles, and then Desette not necessarily having a great box score game, but I thought what he brought defensively against Kansas City was important, and it seems like when they really want to do a lot of stuff on defense, Jakari and Desette are the two that need to be out there.
Yeah. And we praise Jakari, especially after the Saturday game. You know, Frankie Fiddler found a way to get his 20, I think it was 20 points, but did it on 17 shots. And, you know, Dave constantly is praising him. And I thought Desette gave some really good minutes this week, and he just shows how athletic he can be. He can probably guard. You could probably switch and he can guard about any position on the floor. To be able to use him late game where you maybe take a small lineup and can switch one through five when you're playing a smaller team who doesn't have a true big, which seemed UMKC didn't really have any type of back-to-the-basket guy. Not many teams do. I think you can probably name it on one hand with Apple and Morgan, I think, are the only two to really think of that are really going to back you down. But just to have two guys like that that can really take a guard out of the game and just make things difficult for them the whole game, and we're not relying on them to really score or be one of the main scorers. And then, I mean, Jakari's found a way to be an efficient scorer, especially these last few games as well.
Yeah, that brings me to the Tajavis Miller of it all. You know, Bowden Skunberg kind of is what Bowden Skunberg is, and I mean that in a good way, but like, he's not going to create as much offense as Caleb Stewart. He's not going to create as much offense as Bruner. He's not going to create as much offense as Fiddler. Like, he can, or Zeke Mayo for that matter. Now, I think he offers more than all of those players on the defensive end, especially like Mayo, who I don't think has enough energy left to play good defense with how much he's used by the Rabbits and how much they count on him to shoulder the offensive load. I'm not sure Caleb Stewart or Tommy Bruner play any defense. So I'm not saying necessarily that Bowden's a worse player than them or any, you know, less deserving of whatever postseason or preseason awards, et cetera, et cetera. He has a very specific role, but Bowden kind of gets his points through the offense. He can create a little bit, but like even late shot clock, there's not a ton of Bowden, you know, hits you with two crossovers and a step back, right? He likes to go down in the post, likes to shoot open threes when they come to him, and he likes to drive baseline and do that little kiss off the window. Like, he's got his stuff that he does, but he's not like individually generating offense. And that's fine. They you know, they should have other guys that can occasionally do that. And where I'm getting to with that is the guard play, I think, is the reason why NDSU's not first in the conference. Not necessarily on Bowden Skunberg, but I would say Damari Wheeler-Thomas hasn't had the sophomore season that we were hoping for. He's been fine, but he hasn't had the sophomore season that we've been hoping for. And then I'll give you this stretch of games here for Tajavis. He had 23 at Eastern Washington, I believe in a loss. Then he has 10 against Kansas City, only has 5 at Omaha in that overtime loss, and is limited to 22 minutes in the home loss against Denver, though he does score 12 points. Here's what he does from the field then after that. So we've got 4 points on 0 for 5 from the field at home against Oral Roberts. 6 points on 3 of 8 from the field at St. Thomas. 2 points on 0 of 3 from the field at South Dakota State. 8 points on 3 of 11 shooting at UND. 3 points on 0 for 5 shooting at home against Kansas City. And 0 points in 3 minutes against Omaha. And Coach Richmond says he's battling a back injury. Now, we're not doctors. We don't know what the deal is. And obviously, he got a tremendous break against Omaha. But you have to wonder if a weekend off or even 2 weekends off isn't in the long-term best interest of Tajavis Miller, because this is not a sophomore slump. There's something wrong. There's something that's not where it was earlier in the season. I mean, he's a better player than this.
Yeah, and I mean, the first words that I was thinking of is, you know, some kids do hit the sophomore slump in the dog days of February, but for as much as he played last year, him and Damari, both probably haven't had the years that us as fans expected, probably not the years that they expected. But, you know, not having that redshirt year, and most kids, their biggest leap is from that second to third year. Yeah, there's a lot of kids that play a lot of minutes and they make that leap from the freshman to sophomore year. And we've seen that here at NDSU. But sometimes kids just hit a wall, and you know, there are lingering injuries that play into effect with, especially once you get into February, and that's where, you know, doing a little less at practice, taking some time off, making sure you get your treatments in with your trainers. Those are the biggest times where, at least when we had our teams, where like our we had 10 guys in the training room before practice doing treatment. We had 10 guys in the training room after practice doing an ice bath, like making sure you're getting your treatments done. And I'm not saying he's not doing that. Back injuries suck, if that's truly what it is. And it's something that's going to take rest for him to get back to where he wants to be, if that truly is what's going on.
And I that's the camp that I'm in. I'm in the he's hurt camp, because you look at the ugly stretch of six games that I just talked about: Oral Roberts, St. Thomas, South Dakota State, UND, Kansas City, Omaha. Even with that rough stretch, he is still shooting it about 30% better from the field, almost, or excuse me, I shouldn't say that, 30 points. It's 38% from the field last year. He's 41% from the field this year. I'm talking about 36% from three last year, almost 40 this year, and 69% from the free throw line last year, and even 75% this year. Averaging more rebounds per game, more block shots. He's a better player than last year, even with this six-game stretch making up 33% of his appearances. So you go back, you really think about what those numbers were before he got hurt. I don't have short or long-term concern with Tejavis Miller, but with and this is the next thing we need to talk about, with as well as Jakari White is playing, I'm glad he got inserted into the starting lineup. But defensively, with what Derek Doucette is giving you right now and what you're getting from Lance Waddles, like I said, maybe a weekend off for Tejavis Miller is in the best interest of this basketball team.
Yeah, and I think Lance has really given us a spark. His stroke looked really, really good last weekend. And, you know, Derek can defend. Like, he might not be the scorer that Jakari is right now, but why wouldn't you just let those two spell each other and defend the other guy's best guards? And you know, Waddle's taken to, I mean, Tejavis is clearly playing 5 minutes or 3 minutes and not scoring and going 0-for-5 on Thursday. Like, you can't, don't continue to throw the kid out there if he's not feeling 100%. Confidence wise, it's not going to feel good when you're playing like that, when you know the caliber of player that you are. And, you know, we talked about the bad games he's had here recently, or bad shooting games. I mean, he still found a way to get his last year and found a way to defend and spark the team and find a way to get minutes. If he's to the point where Dave can only play him 3 minutes, like, yeah, let's shut him down for a game and just see how it goes. And, you know, maybe you still dress him and let him warm up and see how loosened up you can get that back. And maybe you need him, but I don't think you keep throwing him out there and putting him more into the doghouse where he's not playing well, and take the confidence away from a very talented kid who's a very big part of your long-term plans.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you look at, and we'll just fast forward here to the win over Omaha. And the depth that this team has had is something that we have talked about a ton on this show. And so that can be utilized, especially at that four position where they're starting Fetterson, but there's times that they go small and Fetterson and Morgan kind of alternate. Well, you have the two four bodies that have sort of gotten bumped out of the rotation in, oddly enough, Sam Hostreiter, who you gave a shot to against Kansas City. He played for the first time in a million years, it seems like. And then Jeremiah Burke gets a look and makes a three. And I think it's just an athletic body that they don't have. But he can do a ton of stuff. Both he and Hostreiter can do a ton of stuff for them at the four, if they just want to do more of those lineups where Bowden plays the three, instead of having Bowden play so much power forward or you know, going small so often. If you need to give Tejavis a weekend off, just start Jakari, and then you can bring Waddles in. That's great. You can bring Doucette in. That's great. But then your other bench guy can be either Hostreiter if you want some more shooting, or Burke if you want some more athleticism and some more defense. And that eight is fine. And Coach Richmond's been plenty, comfortable playing only eight before. And so if your eight is the starting five plus Waddles plus Doucette, I'm very cool with the eighth guy being Burke or Hostreiter, or even alternating whether you need offense or defense, either way. So the depth of this team, I think, is what could maybe give you a chance to get Javis right. Maybe it's just a situation where the doctors, the trainers, whatever, saying like, you can play through this, but you know, it's going to take an off season to fix, or it's not going to get, you know, better unless you take a month off, and they might not feel like they have a month. So that whole situation is interesting. Getting into the game though, an impressive shooting night. Anytime that you go, you know, 50% from three, that's big. Free throw shooting then goes the other way, right? Where they miss some big free throws down the stretch. But really, I thought this was one of their more impressive performances. I know Fiddler kind of got his, but it was on 7-16 shooting. And one of those was just a miracle ball to end the first half, right? You got him to turn it over four times, which is a lot. I mean, for a first team all leaguer. And yeah, he got 22 points, but that was on 16 shots in 39 minutes. I mean, he was gassed and frankly didn't have the legs to make kind of a wide open game winner. And of course it never should have got to that point, but I thought their defensive, strategy with Frankie to make him inefficient, to make him turn the ball over, I thought that was really, really impressive. And really they dominated this game. I know what happened in the last minute, but they dominated Omaha.
Yeah. And it was disappointing to see them come back and have that type of shot to win the game. But I think just looking back, I mean, on the box score, I mean, 18 assists and 29 made shots is as impressive as it gets. Shooting 53.7% from the floor, six guys in double figures. So you're moving the ball, and you know, you made a first team all league guy work for it. And it's kind of crazy seeing the overall team box score. I mean, you held Omaha to 41%. They shot a couple more free throws, but you made four more threes. It almost doesn't make sense that it was a 2-point game in the end, and just shows that NDSU kind of dominated this one. You know, you gave up 10 offensive rebounds, but getting two wins and obviously plenty of learning points for Coach Richmond with the end of game stuff still, and 13 turnovers is obviously going to be more than he's going to want. But I think defensively holding a team like Omaha, who tends to be a good scoring team, to 41% is a good performance.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I think we'll probably get back together to talk about the road trip here. NDSU heading to Oral Roberts in Denver. That's an interesting swing. I think the Bison are probably pretty annoyed that they lost to Denver at home, beat Oral Roberts at home. Oral Roberts is reeling a little bit. I think the goal certainly would be to split. But if they could find a way to beat those two teams. And that's really been the story of the whole Summit League season. It's like every time they get it, you know, you win at Frost and then you completely give away a game at the Betty. Now they finally won two games in a row. They finally, you know, did that. I still think they're the best team in the league. And I know that sounds insane, but I've just seen what the league has to offer. And other than maybe St. Thomas, which maybe sounds nuts, like, I don't fear any of these clubs, but they've got to not give away games. And a sweep would obviously just be a tremendous, tremendous move forward and proof that like they've kind of gotten over the hump of playing with their food and just go and get these wins.
Yeah, and I think this week, you know, we talk about wanting to get two wins, and they're definitely capable of doing that. A split puts them in position to – basically beat the teams that are ahead of them to end the season and almost control their own destiny. I mean, you still got St. Thomas at home. You still got South Dakota State at home. You still got UND at home. South Dakota State's got a road trip to KC and Omaha. They still got at UND. They still got at NDSU. A team like St. Thomas, they still go to NDSU and SDSU here in the next week. Or next week, they have two road games with those two with only one game this week. So, I mean, I think a split this week puts them in position where – if they just beat those teams at home, they're going to be in the position to literally get the one or two seed in the regular season, which is crazy to think.
All right, Nate, we will either get back together on Thursday for a full weekend preview, or hopefully after a Bison win at Oral Roberts, we can break that one down and preview Saturday's game on Friday. We'll kind of figure out what works for you and I's schedule, but thank you as always for spending a little time with us.
Thank you. Go Bison.
As always, we want to thank Nate for making the time. I want to thank Andy Rickoff as well. I want to thank the good people over at Below Zero Wrestling. And thank you guys for listening. Have a phenomenal rest of your week. And go Bison.